2018 marks the fifth anniversary of the China-proposed Belt and Road Initiative. The initiative has grown from a concept to a key platform for building a community of economic prosperity, as well as a shared future for humanity. So before we get into the nitty-gritty, I think there's some definition duty to perform here. So I'll start with you, Lai Ming.
All right, the Belt and Road Initiative. So we have the Belt and the Road. The Belt stands for the Silk Road Economic Belt, and the Road stands for 21st Century Maritime Silk Road. Actually, the initiative is designed to build trade and infrastructure networks connecting Asia with Europe and Africa on and beyond the ancient Silk Roads. And according to a Xinhua report, the Silk Road in ancient China, when it comes to Silk Road, we talk about Chinese history and also the history of the Eurasian continent. And the ancient Silk Road was an essential trading route linking Western China with Central Asia, West Asia, Europe and Africa. I think the earliest example that I can think about is I think sometime in Sui Dynasty, where we talk about an ambassador of sort coming from Daqing. That was the name that we use for the Roman Empire. So we had someone coming from Daqing to visit China, and that's the most memorable example that I can think about. But actually, trade or also businesses have been connecting each other since I think somewhere in the Han Dynasty, about the 2nd century BC.
Well, Lai Ming's always here to provide us with a history lesson, and I always learn something new from this guy. And Qinduo, when you look at the past 5 years, when we see that this grand concept has been gradually been implemented and we see it forge into real action and so many countries involved, don't you think that the original thought of what comprises of the Silk Road, the Belt and Road Initiative, has gradually become more nuanced, and it actually covers almost more ground than what we thought it would be?
Well, that's true. If you look at the past 5 years, I mean, even earlier, the background of Belt and Road Initiative, why was there such a proposal? You know, what's the necessity for that from the Chinese side? The suggestion, you know, by President Xi Jinping in 2013. Well, I think, you know, to inform our listeners, you know, if you look at that 2013, there was basically for China, from the Chinese side, it's a natural growth, natural expansion of Chinese economic growth. And up to this point, since 1978, you know, reform and opening up over the past decades, Chinese economy, you know, we have accumulation of a lot of foreign reserve. We have more than $3 trillion U.S. dollars. And the problem is like, what you are going to do with those amount of U.S. dollars? Then, you know, there is a need for outbound direct investment from China to the outside world instead of receiving money from other countries here, investment. So there's a reversion of investment. So there's a need. And also, if you look at the report in 2017 by Asian Development Bank, basically it said that there's a need of $27 trillion U.S. dollars investment in infrastructure from 2017 to 2030 in order to keep economic growth, the robust economic growth in the Asia-Pacific region. So there is a real need for investment in infrastructure, road, you know, railways, ports, airports, you know, water facility, things like that. And also, from China's own experience, we know we benefited greatly from investment in infrastructure, creation of jobs, the boost of economic development, the speed for deals to be made. So China thinks, you know, this is the right way to go. I mean, to invest in infrastructure, to connect different countries, different regions, and so to smooth over the trade and the investment. Everybody benefits from that, creation of jobs for local countries, local regions, mm-hmm. and also, of course, the revenues, and for the Chinese investors, so they get their benefits too. And for the Chinese products, we find a larger growing markets. What's wrong with that? So that's why the proposal. And of course, the involvement is economic belt, Silk Road, and later on it was expanded to basically say, hey, it's open and inclusive. Any country, they're ready to jump on the wagon, you're welcome.
Yeah, even the Latin American countries and African countries.
Yes,
Yes.
that's right.
And certainly, I think in this day and age, especially when we see what's going on in the US, I mean, every day there is something fresh coming out of the Trump White House. And we see that America is very much pivoting towards the America First, make America great again, those kind of proposals. And here, when we see what China is doing, it seems like almost two countries are going in slightly opposite directions. One, China being more embracing and very welcoming, and also forwarding a lot of initiatives to want to establish economic cooperation, more cultural exchange with so many different countries on the Belt and Road route. So it's rather interesting to see what's going on, what has been achieved in the last 5 years.
Yeah, it's a good point here. Keen observation, obviously. Some people would say the U.S. is closing the door. Not exactly, but it's getting more isolationist, we call it. And for the Chinese side, it's a continuation of opening up and reform. And for globalization, more countries will get involved in the BRI, the initiative over there. So China is getting more open to the outside world, is more for globalization. You see, sometimes people even call it like a globalization version 2.0, 2.0, right? The new version of globalization led by the Chinese initiative here. But it does say something, in terms of BRI, there are, popular misunderstanding. One is, it's really about economic and trade infrastructure mostly. Primarily, I would say, of course, it's about connectivity, like even people to people. What about the policy alignment between China and other countries? But there's a geopolitical. Sometimes people see it from the geopolitical lens, especially people from the West. They see, hey, is this China's ambition, to challenge the U.S. or to even replace the U.S. or Chinese version of globalization? No, it's simply about trade and investment. It's about infrastructure. There's no political ambition and geopolitical ambition. No military maneuver here. But there's also sometimes lack of understanding from developing countries. People would say, "Hey, is this China? In this in dealing with other countries, is China with the upper hand? Are we at a weaker position? Is China going to take advantage of the financial power, firepower? Sometimes there's a debt issue. There's concern. But I think of course, some of the concerns are legitimate. Chinese side should deal with that. Sometimes there's overemphasis or exaggeration of the debt issue.
Yes, and certainly there's a lot of communication that needs to be in place for it to be a shared development and something that all parties can be
Win-win?
comfortable
Yeah,
with.
exactly. If you look at the Mombasa, Nairobi, right? We'll talk more about that. Quite a number of good examples.
Yes, we'll get into the railway part in a second. Before that, Lai Ming, I saw you researching on the economic development of China and with all these countries. Well, do you see the economic achievements that's been established between China and all these countries?
Of course, let's look at some of the concrete actions and tangible results that we've achieved so far. So by the end of April this year, China had signed 101 deals with 86 countries and organizations in a wide range of areas under the initiative. And in the past 5 years, China's trade volume with countries along the Belt and Road routes has exceeded $5 trillion. And last year, China's trade volume with those countries grew by 14.2%, marking a record growth in 6 years. And also in 2017, China's imports from these countries were worth over $666 billion, accounting for a fourth of China's total import volume. And also, recent data suggests that the benefits unleashed by the Belt and Road Initiative began to stand out in 2017. Under its framework, Chinese companies have established economic and trade zones in over 20 countries, bringing $1.1 billion in tax income to those countries and creating over 180,000 jobs. And really, on the issue of connectivity, and also investments in countries like Asian countries and European countries and African countries, I think it makes a lot of sense for China to do that, to reach out to those countries. Because one of the points made by Joseph Stiglitz in his book, Globalization and Its Discontent, and also the point that I've been highlighting repeatedly on our show, I think globalization has brought a lot of wealth to the world in general. But during the process, the wealth hasn't been distributed evenly. Mm-hmm. And that's going to have a problem. Because you can't have two countries, the U.S. and China, making all the money and not investing elsewhere. Because that way, it's not going to be sustainable. That one of the processes of globalization is that the whole world is becoming an economic system. Everyone is in it. And then when you have two of the wealthy people, the one thing we know about wealthy people is they don't necessarily buy everyday products. They don't account for the bulk of economic activities in the world or in a society. So in order for the system to be sustainable, in order for the benefits of globalization to be shared by everyone, it makes a lot of sense for the wealthiest to hand out to invest in everywhere.
Certainly, that is an interesting look at this, and certainly today, I think it's opportune to think about globalization and the distribution of wealth. I think things have changed in the last five years in global politics and also in economy. And we see that China has really spearheaded in trying to establish and achieve this common interest in we start with the economy and then we go on to other areas where possibly that there's this shared sense of humanity that can ultimately be achieved. So here we see that also the Asian Infrastructure Investment Bank has been established as well, and it has carried this rather key role in financing a lot of the international projects for them to be achieved in along the Belt and Road. And what do you think is financing going to be this constant issue that must be addressed?
Yes, the birth of AIIB. Of course, it's at the beginning, it's a bit controversial. We know that when Obama was in power, he basically urged the Western powers, countries, not to join the AIIB, but Britain, appeared to be the first one, actually, going against the will of the U.S. administration and joining the bank. The bank is basically being managed by the best and the brightest in the world. It has the recruitment process internationally, the best managers to manage the bank. And also, if you look at the investment from the bank now, the loans, India appears to be the largest receiver or second largest receiver of those investment in infrastructure. Mm-hmm. So they have a lot. We know in India, the bottleneck for its economic growth is the lack of infrastructure, proper infrastructure. So, it is helping India to achieve their goal of economic growth. This is part of this Belt and Road Initiative. So this is a specific example of the good things mm-hmm. it has done. And also, if you look at the recent case of Mumbai, Nairobi, the high-speed railway, called SDG, SGR, the railway, the new railway actually cut the cost of transporting container from the port city of Mombasa to Nairobi by half. Mm. So you can see, the great undertaking done by this railway, and people traveling between the two cities, their travel time also cut by half. I know, I'm sure young people are excited, are happy, the travelers. You go to the other destination faster and cleaner. I mean, why not?
Well, yes, Chinese people are very much into cutting travel time, right. And everything has to be delivered to my door next day latest. Otherwise,
even on the same day, sometimes.
You give a bad comment. And I think in a way that our society has developed so fast that, of course, there's the convenience, but we'll also talk about the challenges later on today's show. And here I will play you a clip from a Kenyan businessman. His name is Christopher Zioka, and he has something to say about the railway built in Kenya.
Kenyans wanted to ease congestions in roads, so they decided to come up with SGR to ease traffic on roads. This SGR thing is one, cost-effective. Two, the reception at the customer services, when you call them, they always pick your call, they facilitate you with a pay bill number, so you can always pay online and then you print the ticket. We always see some Chinese signages in the cabins, in the coaches, and also some announcements are made in Chinese. So Chinese presence is felt all over. Transportation improvements like these ones are welcomed by people, in fact, very much welcomed. Like the people around me, everyone wants to travel by it because of the time it takes, the punctuality. The message I have is to the Chinese government, maybe to do other 3 or 4 because people are in need of them. I hope the government of today is supporting Chinese government and it will continue supporting them. And we, the citizens, we support them 100% and they are welcome to our country. Thank you, Chinese people. See you as I see you.
That's a really lively soundbite from Christopher Zioka, and he's a businessman in Kenya. And yes, this short interview was conducted in the railway station. That's why you hear all the things going on in the background. And certainly, I think it's interesting to see that, in a way, I think Chinese people are very hospitable and very warm to people that are not originally from the country. And in a way, we think other people think the way as we do. Chinese people are very hardworking, and we think that economic development is key to the livelihoods of people. And once your living standard is improved, once you have the fast trains to enable you to go from A to B, conduct business, and greatly shorten the cost of communication and doing business and conducting your daily lives, things will get better. Because that's how Chinese people have experienced the growth we enjoyed in the last 30, 40 years. But when you look at certain African countries, when you see that the economic development stage are certainly not the same, I mean, would it be in the interest of local people to really shorten travel time by this much? And I mean, it would be understandable if local people sometimes feel differently.
That's right. And of course, for the business, people welcome it mostly, and travelers welcome the construction of this new infrastructure projects. And also remember, if you look at, I mean, this is a fact actually, around the globe, the country with the highest capability to build infrastructure and has the financial firepower to finance it, that's China. That's probably the only country, I mean, we can do it quickly and also with high quality. Of course, that does not mean there's a complete success without any complaint from it. For example, like SGR from Mombasa to Nairobi. Remember, before the coming into being of this railway, people use the truck to transport those containers from the port city to the capital city. And those truck drivers and those companies, they're not happy. They say, oh, I'm losing business. But though, look, I would say this is a problem, a challenge in the process of development. People need simply to make adjustment about the work, about their lifestyle, to follow this new trend, and then to try to create new business and to company with the new railway. Of course, there's extension of this railway to other cities. Ultimately, there will be a network of railway in the East Africa area, in different countries like Rwanda, Ethiopia, Kenya. So that, in that way, regional countries will benefit more from that. We remember infrastructure usually is long-term. When we look at the profits or the interests, it's long-term. You know, investment today won't bring back returns next year or a year after. No, usually it's 5 years later, 10 years later. I mean, it's a lifelong time investment.
Yeah, that is a really good point. And not only have great achievements been made in the realm of economics and finance, but there's also a lot more cultural exchange that has been established in the last 5 years. Here we have a couple of sound bites from various people, and we'll see what they have to say about the Belt and Road Initiative.
I think the Belt and Road Initiative is a massive project which will take major manpower and financial support. It provides countries alongside with significant opportunities in economic and cultural cooperation. I hope China and Malaysia may cooperate more under the Belt and Road Initiative framework, and I hope more Malaysian students can study in China.
My country, Myanmar, opened up in 2010, which coincides with the proposal of the Belt and Road Initiative. We've benefited a lot. Chinese companies and investments have come to Myanmar, and an increasing number of exchange programs have both helped countries to understand each other. I'm hopeful that in the future, the initiative will be more beneficial for the common man. It's currently more focused on the economic front, and if there can be more people-to-people exchange and cultural cooperation programs, then more average people would benefit.
That's very interesting. From two students from Myanmar and Malaysia, respectively. So Lai Ming, when you look at the cultural exchange aspect of things, there's a lot that's going into this big pot. What do we see here?
Well, I can see one example is I think the New York City, they do a good job at being inclusive. They think of food coming from diverse cultures as gift or as assets that their people get to enjoy. I think Chinese people are yet to get rid of to develop that kind of attitude. And I think that in time we will have that attitude, and that's going to benefit the Chinese culture.
That is a very good point, and we'll be back after this short break.